Welcome on in tonight. It's been a little bit of a change of plans. It's the Abe TL Show, getting you started here on your evening. A hump day Wednesday, carrying you through all the way until 10 o'clock tonight. And we are in, and it's finally time, football mode. We got a lot going on with the Atlanta Falcons, but a lot going on in college football as well. Fantasy football. Boy, I got a story for you guys. I don't know yet when I'm getting to it, I got a fantasy football story you need to be here to talk about. You know what? Let me look at the rundown and find out when I can talk about this. Let's go with 8 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, I'm going to start the segment with a fantasy football discussion that you want to be here for. Potentially, and I can let you decide, potentially the worst fantasy football team ever assembled. I'll give you the details at 8 o'clock. But we got a lot more to get to here between now and then. Again, it's Abe Gordon here filling in for Chris Thomas tonight until 10 o'clock tonight. Week one in college football starts tomorrow. A lot of games. A lot of games going on tomorrow. Some are better than others. There's no doubt about that, but you'd be surprised how many interesting storylines there are, even for the games you might not think are great. Look, obviously there's two big ones on Thursday, two big ones on Friday. Tomorrow, Boise State, South Florida, Nebraska, Cincinnati. On Friday, Auburn and Baylor, Georgia Tech and Colorado. But I'm telling you what, there's a lot more interesting games on Thursday than you might think for a variety of reasons. Now, I'm interested, and obviously a lot of these games are going to be blowouts. I'm not looking for competitive performances. I'm looking for storylines on these Power Four teams. One of them being at Missouri. Now, Missouri's hosting Central Arkansas tomorrow. They're going to obliterate them. It's an FCS squad. There is no betting line on this game. But Missouri's going to give one half to Bo Prabula and one half to Sam Horn at quarterback. I want to see how they look. I want to see who wins that job ultimately. Is Missouri still in that discussion? They've been pretty close the past couple of years. I feel like a step back is coming, but who knows? Duke, 34.5-point favorites against Elon, but it's Darian Mensah's first start for the Blue Devils, the Tulane transfer who reportedly moved over to the ACC for $4 million. So there's a lot of storylines besides just the big boys, and we're going to talk about the big boys later, really throughout the course of the show. A guest of mine who I regularly have on to chat college football, John Bryce, a football scoop. He's going to join us at 7:20, but we've got a full preview. Again, I'm only hosting here tonight. We've got college football on tomorrow. We've got college football on Saturday, on Sunday, and on Monday. Tomorrow, Cincinnati and Nebraska is going to be on your airwaves starting at 8:30. On Saturday, two of the big boys, Texas and Ohio State. That game, pregame at 11:30 and kickoff at noon. And, of course, before the pregame, you got college football game time. Myself, Garrett Chapman, John Fricke, Chris Goforth. We'll get you set up for what is a massive, massive week one. The play-by-play continues on 92.9 The Game on Sunday. Notre Dame at Miami. And it's the one game that's kind of a sleeper this weekend. I think everyone's so focused on Texas, Ohio State, so focused on LSU and Clemson. People are forgetting Notre Dame and Miami, not me. We're going to talk about that throughout the course of the show. I think that's a massive, massive game implication-wise for the ACC, for Notre Dame, for Carson Beck. I'm fascinated by how overlooked it feels that game is. It's pretty much a top 10 matchup right there. Standalone game on Sunday, going to be on 92.9 The Game at 7:30. And then Bill Belichick's first game, TCU at North Carolina, home game there on Monday night, also going to be on the station. So a lot of college football coming your way over the course of the weekend, a lot of college football coming your way over the course of the next 4 hours. Falcons, initial 53-man roster set, and I think it's important we use that term. They're using that term. We are. There will be changes. There will be adjustments. They've also made some announcements on the practice squad. We'll talk about that in our next segment and take a look at the roster breakdown there. But Most of it seems to be relatively set. A couple of other things I want to get to here. The Atlanta Dream, and I know it's not for everyone. I know not everyone's paying attention. You should, at least a little bit. This is a team right now. They're hosting the Las Vegas Aces just down the road at 7:30 tonight. It's a massive game, and they've been involved in a number of big, big games for them over the course of the last 2 weeks or so. They are holding on to the number two seed in the WNBA. They just came off not too long ago a win over the one seed in Minnesota, and so they are looking like they could be potential contenders when we get to the playoff stage. So, look, I'm not saying you should, ignore college football to watch the Atlanta Dream, but I also don't think we should ignore what they've accomplished thus far this season. It's far and away the most successful season in Atlanta Dream history, and I think Alicia Gray should be getting a little bit more shout for WNBA MVP, if we're going to be quite honest. She's been outstanding. So a lot going on there with the Atlanta Dream. Big game against the Las Vegas Aces, who got a win just by a couple of points. I think it was maybe 2 points the other night, a few nights ago. The Braves, boy, they're giving you something to think about for next year. And it's I'm going to talk about falling into the trap a little bit later as it relates to me and my expectations for the Atlanta Falcons. I feel like I'm starting to fall into that trap for the Atlanta Braves. And again, not for whatever the rest of this season has to offer. But they're looking fun. They have been fun again. The offense is exploding. I know the pitching is still, on some nights, not where it needs to be. But it's tough to look at this team right now and feel like they can't do so much more next year if they just do what they're doing. Michael Harris is red hot. He stayed hot today, had, I think, three hits. Ozzie Albies, last two games, has, what, 9 RBI, whatever, 10 RBI, whatever the number is? And this team is looking good right now. And again, they're not going to make a run. I openly admit they're not making a run. It's way too little, way too late, way too many injuries, all that. But you start to look. I mean, Spencer Strider had a good outing. Well, you'll see if he can follow that up next time. But you start to look at it and just say, man, if you could just do this at the start of next season offensively, if you can figure out what you're doing with your rotation, there's no reason this team can't go back to being one of the better teams in the National League and competing for the NL East. Wasn't to be this year. But they're giving you something to think about. And Ozzie Albies specifically, look, here's the setup at second base. It's $7 million to keep him for another year. It's $4 million to move on. It's going to cost you $4 million to move on. With what he's doing right now, I'm paying the extra three for a total of seven, and he's my starting second baseman next year. And just like Michael Harris, you hope he can do what he's doing now at the start of the season as opposed to 5 months of slump and then get red hot at the end. So I don't know. The Braves offense went for 9 runs last night in the 9th inning. Was a tight game. Was a tie game. Turned into a blowout. And then they took control from the early stages tonight. Jurickson Profar with a leadoff home run tonight. Or I guess say it today. Joey Wentz with a good outing. 6 2/3, I think he went. 4 hits, 1 run. And again, in an ideal world, he's certainly not part of your rotational plans next year, but I think we saw this year, rotational plans far from an ideal world. And so we'll see how that plays out next season. But started to rebuild my confidence a little bit. Like for most of this year for the Braves, my mindset was like, you can't just run it back. Why would I believe that next year is going to be different than this year, right? Like, that's part of the mindset. And then things started to change. Things started to change first and foremost for Michael Harris, because the Braves are not going to be what they need to be if Michael Harris is not the dude he can be. And then Ozzie Albies is starting to turn. And Drake Baldwin's good, but so is Sean Murphy. You don't have Austin Riley, but Matt Olson popped one. I mean, he hit a bomb today. you decide whether or not his home run to dead center is the reason Ronald Acuna got beaned on the very next pitch. Maybe it was intentional. Maybe it wasn't. Looked like Ronald's okay. That's the important thing there. He was not happy about it. Pitcher got tossed. But it's starting to feel like, hey, if the Braves can stay healthy on the mound, and that's a big if, but they got a number of arms now. Like, even if Grant Holmes isn't going to be able to come back next year, you got so many arms now that in a certain spot you maybe can trust, like a Joey Wentz, like a Hurston Waldrop. So if you get Schwellenbach and Sale, and Sale's going to come back here this weekend, right? Schwellenbach and Sale, Strider, Ronaldo Lopez. Maybe it's Hurston Waldrop. Maybe it's someone else. No A.J. Smith-Shawver, at least until the late stages next year. Who knows what's going on with Grant Holmes? If you could just stay healthy in that rotation, though, and keep the plate going the way it is. I don't know, man. I'm starting to buy back into the Braves for next season. That's the sucker that I am, by the way. As soon as the slate is wiped clean, and I know it's going to be wiped clean for next year, I'm like, I'm all in. And that's part of the problem I have with the Falcons, by the way. I'm going to talk about the Atlanta Falcons at 7. Well, I'm going to talk about them next here with the 53-man roster, the practice squad, and what's going on there. Also, the injury. But at 7:40, I want to talk about my expectations for the Falcons. I hate to admit it, they have changed. They have. I think it's a fair explanation as to why. I'll get into it. Maybe you're the same type of fan. Maybe you're not. Maybe you call me scared or a coward for walking back some of the comments and feelings I had. But, I mean, was it from the quote from draft day? We live in a different world than we did 30 seconds ago. I'll tell you what I mean by that at 7:40. Coming up next, though, the 53-man roster is set. We'll give you the breakdown. Also, who's already been added to the practice squad, who might make an appearance, and who won't we see at all this year? It's tough, but we knew it was coming. It's the Abe TL Show. We roll on. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Welcome back in live to the Kia Studios. Abe Gordon in tonight until 10 o'clock, filling in. It's the Abe TL Show. The Atlanta Falcons have set their roster here. 53 men have made it. We'll see. There'll be some turnover, as there always is. They call it the initial 53-man roster for a reason. A couple of names already added to the practice squad as well. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, the one name you won't see on the 53-man roster is Caleb McGarry. The Falcons placed Caleb McGarry on the IR, but it's the season-ending IR. I know there was just an inch of hope that it would be on the IR, quote, designated to return, but that is not the case. The two players the Falcons have placed on IR designated to return are Storm Norton, who we know is going to miss up to 8-9 weeks there. And Troy Anderson as well, who, again, I don't even know if we've gotten a timeline on him, and we'll see how that goes. But the injury to Caleb McGarry, again, I'm surprised we haven't gone and gotten a word specifically on what it is, but it is now to be considered season-ending. He is ineligible to be activated at any point this season. So your initial 53-man roster looks like this. The offense has 24 players. Defense has 25. So relatively balanced. You got three specialists. We'll work backwards forward. Younghoe Koo, Liam McCullough, the long snapper, and Bradley Pinion. Those are your three specialists. Younghoe Koo apparently has won the kicking competition, if there was one. Not entirely convinced that it was really open for business for Lenny Krieg. But we'll hear a little bit more about him in just a moment. So the Falcons offense has 24 players on the 53-man. Of note, only two quarterbacks. And you'll see a lot of teams that are going to have three quarterbacks on their 53-man. And one of them will be game day inactive. That's what Cleveland is doing. And we'll talk about their quarterback situation a little bit later. Cleveland's got Joe Flacco starting. They've got Dylan Gabriel, who they named as backup. And Shedeur Sanders will be the emergency third quarterback. Right now, that's not happening for the Atlanta Falcons. It's Penix, and then it's Kirk Cousins. If for some reason they both go down or are unable to play, the Falcons will have to use an emergency quarterback who's not a quarterback. Again, this is on the initial roster. Come week one, maybe they do activate one of the players from the practice squad to serve as quarterback. Most notably and most likely, certainly, would be Easton Stick, who has been added to the practice squad. But that was of interest. Certainly there was a risk in letting Easton Stick go. Teams could claim him off waivers. But he got through waivers and has joined the practice squad. Running backs, it's Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algier. And then how about Nathan Carter making the squad? We saw a lot from Nathan Carter. Some real explosion in the run game in some of these preseason games. Also saw a pretty good showcase from Nathan Carter in the performance in the joint practices against the Tennessee Titans. And so that got him a spot on the team over a couple of players who maybe you thought were locks. Injury certainly was a problem there for Carlos Washington. Wide receivers, very interesting battle for wide receiver. Obviously the big four, Drake London, Darnell Mooney, Ray-Ray McCloud, Kadarius Hodge have made it. You knew that Jamal Agnew, as a return man, was pretty set to make this squad as well. The other two who made it right now at receiver, and again, seven receivers, are David Sills and Casey Washington. On the outs were Dylan Drummond, Nick Nash, Chris Blair. And Blair had two touchdowns in the preseason there. But it's just some big traffic there. And Chris Blair, those three, Dylan Drummond and Nick Nash are added to the practice squad. Four tight ends make this team. I wasn't sure if they'd go four or three. And you also have to wonder if the season-ending injury to Caleb McGarry is a reason to have kept a fourth tight end. You knew Kyle Pitts and Charlie Warner were going to make it. It felt like Teagan Quateriano was also going to be your third tight end. A pretty good preseason, though, and maybe the need for an extra blocking tight end, potentially as discussed. And Felipe Franks makes the team. Now, I was mentioning a couple moments ago, like, hey, you don't have a third quarterback right now in the initial 53. It's just Penix and Cousins. Obviously, Felipe Franks has a background of playing quarterback. He tried to enter the league as a quarterback and eventually made the position change. I would think if you don't have a third emergency quarterback on game day that Felipe Franks would serve as your emergency quarterback. It would make sense. Now, I don't know how much time he spent in that room or the playbook and all that stuff going through reads. But if you're down to your emergency third string at that point, I mean, you simplify the offense. You hand the ball off as much as you can. That game's probably done for anyway. So, but I probably answer my own question. I guess if you get to a situation where you need the emergency quarterback, I would think Felipe Franks is there. That's not why he made this team. He made this team because of his playmaking abilities and his physicality at tight end. And then the offensive line, you got eight of them. You're starting five, well, starting four, and then a question mark. Cobb, Jake Matthews, Matthew Bergeron, Ryan Neuzel, Chris Lindstrom, Elijah Wilkinson, Kyle Hinton, Jovan Gwynn, and Jack Nelson. Again, this is the initial 53-man roster. The Falcons are completing a trade for Michael Jarrell of the Seahawks, so they'll have to make a move at some point to get him on to this roster. So I don't believe I've seen. Let me check my email, actually, because they did send something out. Let me see if there's been a change here. It just says they've acquired him, and that's it. It doesn't say anything about if he's on the practice squad or if he's on the 53. So there may be some more comments coming in regards to that. The defense, 5 defensive linemen, 6 edge rushers, 4 interior linebackers, 7 cornerbacks, count them, 7 corners, and then 3 safeties. Rook, David Onyemata, Lakale London, Brandon Dorlus, Zach Harrison, those are your big boys on the D-line. Your edge rushers, no surprises, Arnold Ebikadie, Leonard Floyd, James Pierce Jr., Jalen Walker, D'Angelo Malone, and Braylon Trice. And a couple of names that didn't make it, specifically Khalid Kareem has been added to the practice squad. Caden Ellis, Divine Diablo, J.D. Bertrand, and Josh Woods, your linebacking group. Woods has been a standout on special teams, and I look for that to be a big portion of his role in the regular season as well. At the cornerbacks, you got A.J. Terrell, Clark Phillips, Mike Ford, Mike Hughes, Natron Brooks, Billy Bowman, and then D. Alford is interesting because there were some reports early on that D. Alford was going to be off of this 53-man, but he does make it there. And then at the safety position, Jesse Bates, Xavier Watts, and DeMarco Hellams. Your practice squad, initially, and there's 3 spots that remain, including one name I thought would be there that isn't. But here's what your practice squad looks like alphabetically. Chris Blair, the receiver. Kobe Bryant, the defensive back, very high. A lot of people were very high on him, but it was a numbers game. He just couldn't crack. So Kobe Bryant is going to be part of the practice squad, and I think the Falcons are pretty happy to get him back there. Dylan Drummond, who had an outstanding performance throughout offseason and in the games at receiver. Joshua Gray, Ronnie Harrison. C.J. Henderson is another one I want to talk about. Came to the Falcons late, but reportedly looked pretty good. And it was always going to be a stretch for him to make the team. I think the plan was to get him in here and try and work him into the practice squad, get him a little bit more familiar with the defense that Jeff Ulbrich's going to run. But nice to see a veteran there. We mentioned Khalid Kareem, Lenny Krieg, and he's got the international pathway program thing. So he's doesn't technically count against your practice squad numbers. Nick Nash, the receiver. Another one who he was, what, a triple crown winner last year in at his level of college football. And so he makes a practice squad. Brandon Parker, the O-lineman, Joshua Simon, Kentavious Street, and Carlos Washington Jr. And then Easton Stick comes back as well. It'll be interesting to see if before week one he does get added to the game day 53 as the emergency quarterback, or if they keep him on the practice squad. Again, we use the term initial practice squad for a reason. There's going to be a lot of movement there. So that is your 2025-2026 Atlanta Falcons as of August 27th. And again, we already mentioned at least one thing has to change. Michael Jarrell will have to be added, and we'll see a corresponding move at that time. If I had to guess a corresponding move, just looking, boy, I don't even really want to guess. Maybe Jack Nelson gets thrown to the practice squad, the rookie offensive tackle out of Wisconsin. Maybe he's the last man out. Who knows? We'll see how it plays out when we get the official announcement. All right, when we come back, we're starting an hour of college football discussion. Week one. Starts on Thursday, continues on Friday, all the way through Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. When we get back, we're going to talk about the early games that I'm looking forward to, the games on Thursday and Friday. We'll also talk to John Bryce in our next hour, footballscoop.com. It's the Abe TL Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Welcome back in. It's the Abe TL Show. Abe in tonight till 10 o'clock. A couple of people have reached out, and their math is better than mine. That is correct. The Falcons' initial 53-man roster is actually 52 players. And I would imagine that Michael Jarrell will be added to that without a corresponding move. And it just goes to show you, one, despite math actually being my strong suit, I just didn't count. I just didn't add them up on my own. But also that Terry Fontenot knows what he's doing. And so there you go. That's what's going on in the NFL. College football, though, get started, and it kind of already got started. Obviously, we had week zero. We had Farmageddon there in Dublin. We actually had a bunch of pretty solid games there. Maybe not all for the right reasons, but UNLV was in a tight one. Obviously, Hawaii-Stanford was an outstanding game, a really good finish in that one. And so Sam Houston and Western Kentucky as well. So there's a boatload of games. I think it's, what, 17 games tomorrow, something like that. Some are better than others, no doubt about it. But I'll tell you what. There's four games I got my eye on Thursday. Two games on Thursday, four that I'm keeping my eye on for Friday. And obviously you could probably guess the four big ones. Thursday at 5:30 on ESPN, number 25, Boise State, and a trip to South Florida, the South Florida Bulls. It's a big game, and it's fascinating to me how much people think, and in my opinion, this is the wrong mindset, but how much people think that last year's Boise State team was just Ashton Jeanty. And I think the mission this year for Boise State is to show you that's not the case. And they'll get an opportunity to do that by going on the road against a very dangerous South Florida squad. In my opinion, this is the group of five, the front runner. Like, whoever wins this game is the team to chase down in the group of five. Boise State right now, the only group of five squad ranked. I think South Florida, though, can enter that discussion if they can beat Boise State. I think Boise State's going to win, and I think they're going to win relatively comfortably. I think a lot of people overlooked how good Boise State was because of Ashton Jeanty. This is a team that even without Jeanty, and at times they needed other people to step up, other players, than they did. You got Maddox Madsen coming back at quarterback, and I'm telling you guys, watch this game, 5:30 tomorrow. And I'm blanking on his first name. I think it's Matt. But the tight end for Boise State, I'm going to call him Matt, but it might not be. Matt Lauter, L-A-U-T-E-R. I watched him play last year while watching Ashton Jeanty. This guy can take over games from the tight end position. There were a couple of times where I was watching the Broncos, and I said, who the heck is that guy? No one's talking about him. He's killing the defense. So I think Lauter can be dangerous. And the other one, on the other side of the ball, Jaden Virgin Morgan, one of the best pass rushers in the entire country. I would not be surprised if he's a back half of the first round next year. I think Boise State has a better defense than people give them credit for. And I'm fascinated to see how their offense looks this year without Ashton Jeanty. I do think Lauter, though, is a guy you need to know and need to become familiar with. And we'll see what South Florida's got for him. After that, a doubleheader to kick things off on Thursday, 9 o'clock ESPN, Nebraska at Cincinnati. Obviously, you've got Dylan Raiola out there doing Patrick Mahomes things, for better or for worse. I think it's a big year for Nebraska. I think it's a big year for Raiola as well. He needs to take the next step, as does Matt Rhule. I think we're kind of in that Nebraska has found a baseline. Now it's time to jump up. This is a game that, while listed as a road game at Cincinnati, it's in Arrowhead. It's probably closer, I would imagine, to Nebraska than it is to Cincinnati. It's going to be full of Big Red. And Rayola's done a lot of things to get headlines and to get coverage. I want to see it on the field. I want to see him look like an NFL prospect. And I don't know that I've seen that consistently a year ago. And for Matt Rhule, the schedule plays in their favor this year. Is Nebraska a fringe playoff team? Now, like Indiana a year ago, we're going to talk about a couple of playoff potential squads, including one that plays Friday on Peacock in the Big Ten, that they're there because the schedule aligns in their favor. You want to know the difference between the Big Ten and the SEC? You can't get to the playoffs in the SEC because the schedule, quote, aligns in your favor. There's just too many good teams. There's not a year when you look at the schedule and say, huh, all we have is Penn State, and we should be favored in every other game. There's not a year like that in the SEC for a team that maybe isn't quite good enough to contend to make the run and have a resume that argues differently. That doesn't happen. That's the difference between those two conferences. There is no – now, you might line up and the schedule might play in your favor if you're already a legit contender and this makes it more feasible. But there is no, we're probably the 23rd or 28th best team in the country, but our schedule's going to put us in the top 12. Could that happen for Nebraska and the other team? Could that happen for Illinois? Now, Illinois is a top 15 team right now. They're ranked number 12. And I do wonder if part of their preseason ranking is the understanding of their schedule and how they may start. We'll find out. So those are the two games on Thursday, 5:30, 9 o'clock, Boise State at South Florida, Nebraska at Cincinnati. And a reminder, Nebraska at Cincinnati is going to be right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Games on Friday. I just mentioned it. I'll run through it quickly. 7:30 at Peacock, Western Illinois at number 12, Illinois. Should be an easy victory for the Illini. Are they a fringe playoff contender? You want to look at a couple of things and just see. So that's going on there at Peacock at 7:30. Two games, though, really good ones on Friday. Both go off at 8 o'clock. And for those of you who have YouTube TV, do not fear. Fox and YouTube TV have come to a short-term extension as they work towards an agreement. You will have this game. Unless something changes in the next 48 hours, you will have this game on YouTube TV, Fox, Auburn at Baylor. Friday at 8 on Fox, Auburn at Baylor. It's a big year and a big opener for Hugh Freeze. Is this season going to get started in the right direction where maybe you can find it's funny. I've always felt this way about coaches taking over programs. The first 2 years about finding your footing and setting a baseline. And from there, you need to take steps forward. That's where we're at with Matt Rhule. I mentioned at Nebraska. They found their baseline, right? 7-5 is that baseline. They need to now take a step forward here and there. And I'd say the same thing for Hugh Freeze. They don't get an easy one, in my opinion, to take that step forward. And I just don't know what we're getting at quarterback at Auburn. Jackson Arnold's a former five-star. We all know the story. It was a disaster at Oklahoma. Didn't get much support around him. And he moves on. Is he still that guy? Is Auburn the right offense for him? I mean, just how good is he going to be? Because I think Baylor's dangerous, and this is a game that's at Baylor. I think Baylor and the Big 12 is wide open. Every show has talked about it. I know Andy and Randy have. I know myself and John Fricke did on College Football Game Time as well. Big 12 is wide open. I think Baylor's in play, guys. Sawyer Robertson returns at quarterback, and look out for their receiver, Josh Cameron. I know we talk about Ryan Williams. I know we talk about Auburn. They got Coleman, right? Cam Coleman. Obviously, Jeremiah Smith up at Ohio State. Make sure you know about Josh Cameron at Baylor, too. And I think this is a really tough road game for Auburn. And it's gonna either set this season off in the right direction for Hugh Freeze, or, I mean, is 1 week too early to start conversations? I mean, they're not firing him after week one. I understand that. You should understand that as well. There's going to be some talk from the fans and potentially boosters if they lose this opener to Baylor. And so I'm fascinated by that. Georgia Tech at Colorado, 8 o'clock ESPN. Is Georgia Tech elite? And I know there's a huge contingent of Yellow Jackets fans here in Atlanta that feel that way. I don't blame you for feeling that way, by the way. But it's still, it's not that they aren't, in my opinion. I think they can be, but it's an unknown. And the big difference for me is Georgia Tech has got a target on their back now the way that other programs have had. I think people expect it now from Georgia Tech. They're not sneaking up on any top 25 teams in the ACC anymore. And the difference is you've gotten away with playing subpar performances against subpar teams because you've done so well against ranked opponents. What you need to have happen is do well against ranked opponents like you have been, I think 6-1, right, under Brett Key. But also you can't drop a game to Syracuse. You can't lose a game to Duke or Wake Forest. And so the consistency for Georgia Tech, I think, is going to be the key to their season. Can they join that the fringe ACC contender group? In my opinion, the ACC, certainly Clemson is a contender. I believe that Miami is as well. Is Georgia Tech that next team? Is it SMU? Could it be Virginia Tech or Louisville? Who's that other team in the ACC? Could they get three teams in the playoffs? If Georgia Tech's one of them, I think they could. And then for Colorado, what are they without Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter? You know, I mentioned that Boise State was a lot more than just Ason Genti last year. What is Colorado without those two? And that's not all they lost. They lost Webster. They lost Horn. They've lost a number of playmakers. Five transfers along the offensive line. Georgia Tech should win and should win handily. If you want to prove to me from day one that you're a team to watch in the ACC that could make a run, set up a massive game against Clemson a couple weeks later, you need to handle business. And then later Friday, 9:30, UNLV at Sam Houston. Just keeping an eye on UNLV. Are they a fringe sleeper? Did not have a great performance in week one, especially not defensively. Do they clean that up against Sam Houston? We'll see. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, week one. The college football conversation continues. A ton of great games this week. It's one of the best week ones I can remember. It really is. And we've only gotten through the games on Friday. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday analysis coming your way next. It's Abe Gordon, until 10 o'clock on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, in the Odyssey app.